Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, your source for conservative talk. I was waiting there because I heard the countdown timer still, but it was a different screen. We've got a heck of a show for you tonight. In fact, I'm not going to spend too much time on the monologue because we got some recent news that broke this morning and then later and then a little bit earlier today. And then we're going to talk about Trump's $500 million case being thrown out, as well as D.C. neighborhoods now being livable. Then, with time permitting, we'll close it out with our hot takes. That is the fired up version of the lightning round. And once again, we have some doozies. But before we begin, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. And if you're listening, please make sure you hit that thumbs up. And once the podcast is over, make sure you share it. And with that, let me bring on tonight's, well, he's not really a guest. He's actually my co-host. That is the G-Man, Mr. G. Mangani. G, how are you doing?
Good. Better that now that I've been promoted as of now.
Well, we got a heavy show, you know. So I kind of want to get right on into it. Usually we let the audience know how we've been, yada, yada, yada. But we got too much news. So first up is everybody's non-favorite, ugly-looking, mustache guy, John Bolton. You know, the FBI raided Bolton's properties in a renewed classified probe, and that's tied to his 2020 memoir. The FBI agents executed, and it was court-authorized. This wasn't just a Trump admin saying, hey, let's go get him. You know, so it was court-authorized at his Maryland home and Washington office this morning. About 7 a.m., they went and they knocked on the door. They didn't beat it down like they did Roger Stone. And it's part of a classified documents investigation. For those of you guys that aren't aware, John Bolton was an NSA advisor in Trump's first regime. They never got along from the get-go. Why he brought him on, I don't know. But John Bolton is a neocon. He's never served, never lifted one finger to defend this country, but has always desired and pushed and ended the lives of young men in this country with forever wars. He's a neocon who loves war. He served in many administrations in that capacity. Now, Bolton in 2020 had a memoir, The Room, Where It Happened. I don't know if he's referring to himself when he was 12 years old or as an adult, but that prompted the Trump administration to sue him in June of 2020 and to block its publication, alleging breaches of non-disclosure agreements and disclosure of classified information. A federal judge allowed the book's release in June of that year, but Bolton did face a criminal probe that started in September of 2020. But that was stopped for political reasons, is what came out under President Biden. Why? He hated Trump. He was a good little plantation soldier boy and would go on camera and would badmouth Trump. Now, the current probe is broader than the memoir. It investigates potential leaks extending into the Biden administration, with the FBI removing lots of boxes from Bolton's office. Your initial thoughts on this, G?
Well, I mean, no one's above the law, right? And I believe that if this was basically, I mean, this was his first term, right? But this is a federal judge who allowed the book's release and he started facing a criminal probe. I think Trump normally just looks the other way most of the time, but when you attack him, he's going to punch back, right? And he's going to say, right, okay, you – and that's more to set everyone else on guard, to say, okay, don't come after me. And that's just the man he is. And we saw George W. Bush during his presidency. He didn't fight back ever, right? So, right. I mean, his presidency just got worse and worse and worse. By 2007, he was a lame duck for a whole 2 years, and then that culminated with the financial crisis. So I think Trump has a different tack on how to respond to these things, and this is just typical of him, and that's fine. I mean, look, they did lawfare against Trump, and it was quote-unquote legal, right? So right. Now he's going to do the same thing. He's going to bite back and say, look, I'm going to do lawfare against you because apparently this is how we do things as a country. And so, yeah, those are my initial thoughts.
All right, so while Kesh Patel was involved in the raid, he posted on X stating, "No one is above the law." And why did he do that? Why did Pam Bondi do that? Why did a bunch of conservatives do that? Well, because that's what all of the mainstream media, that's what they kept talking about. All they could talk about, the mainstream media and Democrats, when they were trying to impeach Trump and then trying to politically persecute him. And gee, your thoughts on our side going, "No one is above the law," kind of throwing it back in the face of the progressives. But what bothered me, or what irked me, and it, to me, I was like, enough, is when it came out a few weeks ago about Obama giving the okay to besmirch Trump and ruin his presidency. How dare you? How dare you attack my boy Obama? You know? So to me, I love this response, "No one is above the law." Your thoughts on that?
That's right. I mean, okay, we talked about this last week with the Clinton Global Initiative, right? Trump did not go after Hillary when he was sworn in the first time around, because I think he was just trying to get along and get some stuff done and work for the American people. I think he has good and noble intentions. So now the way they've acted as monsters, they've kind of created this monster in return, right? And I'm not calling Trump a monster in a bad way. He knows that, okay, during Biden's time, they were trying to apply political retribution. And you remember during the campaign, he said, "My victory will be my retribution." So this Correct. Is retribution. He's going to come after you. If you broke the law, we're not going to look the other way. That's basically his theme right now, is if you broke the law, we're going to prosecute you. Whereas before, he might have just said, "Oh, mortgage fraud, not a big deal. Oh, you wrote a book and a couple lines seem a little suspect. Not a big deal. We'll just let that slide," right? Not letting it slide this time.
And he shouldn't. They shouldn't let it slide. I mean, they've been trying to persecute this guy for a long while. You know, and this is an ongoing story. It just broke this morning, so there's going to be a lot more to come. So here's my take. Suddenly, no one is above the law, as it should be. But the left is twisting this into its political revenge or abuse of power when it hits a Trump critic like Bolton. But come on. There's real evidence here from that memoir and the classified info he already spilled. The Democrats and media threw everything at Trump to take him down over the past decade, from the Russia hoax that Mueller himself said he found no collusion, to the perfect Ukraine phone call that led to a sham impeachment he beat, to the overblown J6 narrative and those witch hunt prosecutions by Letitia James and Fannie Willis that kept falling apart. All hype, no substance, total flops. But Trump, he's navigating this minefield by sticking to the rules, and that's paying off big time. Bolton couldn't stand Trump, so the left propped him up as their anti-Trump hero, and Biden yanked the investigation despite solid grounds to keep it going. Bolton trashed Trump plenty during the Mar-a-Lago mess defending the raid, and he called him out without a hint of sympathy. Now this raid's going to unfold, but the bottom line, if the evidence sticks, it's not payback, people. It's justice catching up after way too long. All right, G, before I get into it, to the audience, it came out this afternoon, or before I get into G's point, in DOJ interviews, Ghislaine Maxwell exonerated Donald Trump regarding any misconduct tied to his 1990s, 2000s friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. So I titled this segment, "Maxwell Defends Trump in DOJ Interview. No inappropriate conduct during Epstein's association." Gee, Maxwell stated Trump was, quote, "never inappropriate with anybody," unquote. And she, quote, "never witnessed the president in any inappropriate setting," unquote. And that was based on their shared interactions with the infamous Jeffrey Epstein. Your initial thoughts?
Well, I think she's telling the truth. I know what the left's going to say. The left's going to say, "Oh, she just wants to pardon." So she's kissing up to President Trump. Because if she goes, "Oh, yeah, well, I saw him do this and that and this and that," then she's not getting that pardon. She's going to be in jail for a very long time. So my thought is that I believe she's telling the truth. And I don't think Trump is that stupid to go over there and do anything. However, Bill Clinton...
Bill Clinton, for whatever we want to say about Bill, he was a player, you know. So for the audience, Maxwell was convicted in December. We all know Maxwell's in jail, but just to remind everybody, she was convicted in December of 2021 of sex trafficking and conspiracy, specifically for Jeffrey Epstein. Nothing about a list, nothing about other players. It was specifically toward Jeffrey Epstein. She's serving a 20-year sentence, dismissed an Epstein client list conspiracy theory as a Salem witch trial. And she looks at that frenzy that targeted individuals like G's favorite president, Bill Clinton, while doubting Epstein's suicide and suggesting possible internal prison murder. Now, let's just talk about the conspiracy here real quick. What do you think of her saying that she thinks he was murdered? Epstein did not kill himself.
I mean, she has the same information we do, right? And look, we really don't know. And I believe Dan Bongino, which he's been strangely quiet lately, but there was a missing minute between 11:59 and midnight.
Yes.
What can you do in 1 minute? I don't know. But, you know, if you have a camera with a static image, so she has the same information as we do. She's hearing this stuff, and she probably believes that. This goes back to RFK and Jackie Kennedy believing that, you know, there are six shooters on the grassy knoll. Like,
yeah.
Because they only had the same information that the rest of us did, right? And
true.
So I don't fault her for believing that. I think most of the people on our side believe that he was killed and didn't commit suicide. But I believe he committed suicide. Now, whether he was forced or blackmailed into committing suicide, that's another question that I can't come to a conclusion on. But I believe he might have been, you know, blackmailed into it. And he might have said, yeah, it's a better way out.
Right. So what G's saying, audience, is like, look, your life's going to be miserable. You're never going to get out. You know too many secrets. Do you really want to be in prison here with Billy Bob and Leroy over here? They've been eyeing you down there, Jeffrey. You're looking good to them. He's like, okay, give me the rope. Give me the rope. So here's my take on this. Look, the left and those with TDS, they're going to spin this, as G said, as Maxwell is just angling for a pardon. But come on. If there was any real dirt on Trump and Epstein, like the Democrats consistently push, it would have blown up years ago, especially back when he first ran. The truth is, there isn't. Once Trump clocked what kind of creep Epstein was, he booted him. That included banning him from Mar-a-Lago. So look, this Epstein mess, as G and I have talked about in the past, it resurfaced because of MAGA demanding the files. And then the left began to flail to exploit it, and they failed at that. In fact, search interest has tanked 89%, as in there's 89% less interest in it than there was just a couple of weeks ago. And it proves, as we've been stating, nobody really cares. Nobody brought this up during the Biden era, did they? Now you see every Tom, Dick, and Harry, translation, Democrats, libertarians, and rhinos. You know, now it's the most important thing this nation has ever faced.
Yeah.
This should really be the final nail in the coffin, but it won't stop those people. It won't stop those parties. It won't stop those hypocrites. To everyone else, they're just beating a dead horse. But their obsession with TDS makes them fail to see the forest from the trees. Gee.
Yeah.
And you know what I got today, real quick?
Okay, what?
I got my big old cup. I got my big old cup here.
And so your video is mirrored, so it looks like MG. But
yeah, there you go. But there it is, GM. So it came in today, big 15-ounce cup, and I love it to death. The classic Grumblings coffee mug. You can check out our swag. We're pretty proud of it. Our my partner, Big John, has done a wonderful job in designing some of this. Now we just got to get a few sales to really make his ego go up. But you can catch that at grumblingsmedia.com. So, G, let's get into the heart of our tale, of our topics tonight, and that is the New York Appeals Court overturns Trump's penalty. And that's huge news that came out, I want to say yesterday. Did it come out yesterday? I think it was yesterday it came out. But it's a unanimous reversal.
It was yesterday.
Yeah, it's a unanimous reversal of a massive civil fraud penalty against Trump. The original judgment imposed over $500 million, which is a financially burdensome strain on Trump, even though he was worth billions. That liquid cash could have bankrupted him. And there was no clear victim. There were no clear losses for anyone, you know. And what this throwing out of this case signaled is clear overreach in using civil statutes for politically charged litigation. And it raises constitutional questions about enforcement limits and due process. And it sets the stage for future appeals that could completely unravel the case's legal foundation. Some of the key topics here, G, the courts ruled 5-0 unanimous decision to overturn the civil fraud penalty. The original fine was between $355 to $364 million, but with interest, it surpassed $500 million. The interest was nearly $100,000 a day alone, and the court found the penalty excessive and violated the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel. The Eighth Amendment defined prohibits the government from imposing excessive fines, bail, or punishments that are cruel or disproportionate to the offense, ensuring penalties remain humane and justified. Now, what makes this a little different is you usually hear about the Eighth Amendment being invoked in criminal prosecutions, not civil like this. So this case involved Trump, the Trump Organization, Don Jr., and Eric Trump, overstating asset values. They said they overstated the asset values by 812 to 2.2 billion in order to secure favorable loan terms. This is where Letitia James first became known to the world. She ran on saying, "I'm going to get you, sucker," in terms of referring to Trump. And her appointed appraiser valued Mar-a-Lago at a measly 18 million. And everybody who knew anything about real estate kind of laughed at that. Are you kidding me? But a corrupt, vile judge who, when he begins his next journey, Mother Earth will be a better place. And why do I say that? Because that man can destroy a life and he purposely abused his power to do just that. But Letitia James and this appointed appraiser said it was only worth $18 billion, and they used that pretty much to help convict him. Industry experts, G, said that was nonsense. They viewed the Mar-a-Lago's true value at about $900 million to $1.8 billion. They cited its location, the acreage, and prestige. And some of the decisions against Trump in this case was a 3-year ban from top corporate roles in New York. Don Jr. and Eric Trump had 5-year bans, meaning they couldn't work or operate in New York. Why were the fraud findings upheld? It was a 5-judge panel. They were deeply split. 2 supported the vile judge we call Engoron or Fraudgoron. They supported his fraud ruling. 2 wanted a new trial, and 1 judge, the only smart one on there, Judge Friedman, he argued the case should be completely thrown out. So the reason they kept those charges in there of overpricing was to avoid a deadlock. The 2 judges who wanted a new trial, they joined the majority solely to preserve finality, not because they agreed on the liability. So, G, your thoughts on this, the exaggerated claims by Letitia James, or by downplaying the values, purposely setting up for political persecution with Judge Engoron. I'm sorry. Was he in on it? Your thoughts, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, let's let the audience, in layman's term, understand what's going on here in a simple way. Like, when you go to get a mortgage for your house, you're going to put down 20%. But if you put down 3%, that means the amount of equity in your house is so low and the amount of loan for that house is so big, you're going to get a worse interest rate, right? And most people in the audience know that. So appraising property is more of an art than a science. And we all know that.
Right.
If you go to Zillow and you go to Redfin, you're going to see 2 different values there that could be off by hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this is just the average home, right? And then you actually go get an appraiser when you're trying to buy a house or refinance. And then they'll come in, they'll come up with a different number. And they could be wildly off, 10, 20, 30%. So this is what happened here. And, you know, How can you actually say, no, this place is actually worth this dollar amount? Now, there is a level of absurdity that you can reach, but again, like, no, people aren't normally prosecuted for this. I mean, look at back in the 2005 timeframe, thousands or millions, I should say millions of people across the country were saying, oh yeah, you know, I'm making this amount, and they just put down an income number and got a mortgage for $1 million. I mean, right. Just absurdity. So we weren't arresting people left and right or fining them. They just, you know, when they went into short sale, they just went into short sale. So now back to Trump. Yeah, I think it's absurd to think that Mar-a-Lago is $18 million, and I don't know what the actual value is, but in the end, all he did was get a lower interest rate on the loan for that, you know, if he's mortgaging a property or whatnot. And for Letitia James to come after him for that, I think that's absurd. There's no science behind appraisal except for, what did the last one sell for? I mean, that's pretty much it. What did the last property around here sell for? And then you calculate, and it's not an exact science. So right. Clearly, this was what, 2023, right? They were trying to stop Trump from running for office again. That's all right. It was about. And to charge him $500 million in fines with another, I believe you said 50% in interest over the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, absurd. Absurd, stupid. I'm glad it was thrown out.
Exactly. So let's talk some specifics here. I want to get your thoughts on this. One of the judges, disgorgement order unjustified, no proven harm or profit linkage. Another judge, AG Letitia James failed to establish causal connection between fraud and profits. And the smart judge claims that James exceeded authority, weaponized litigation to derail Trump's political career. And he notes that the voters rejected that as well because they reelected him. Your thoughts on the judges, especially Friedman? To the audience, this is a Democrat panel. And the judge that is the only Republican judge is more of a Mitt Romney, John McCain type Republican, you know? So this was not a court that said, oh, Trump. It was not that type of court. Your thoughts on their.
Look, this has happened over and over again where it's Democrat judges that come out and say, oh, we're going to stop you from deporting people. We're going to stop you from doing this and that. And then these other judges are reading the news headlines saying, oh, this is Democrat judges block Trump, right? So to have credibility at this point, you gotta have some judges out there who are Democrats saying, hey, maybe we should be fair on this one. And this is such low-hanging fruit, if they came after Trump on this and they actually upheld or ruled against Trump, I think they would really be tarred and feathered. So I think this is not worth the squeeze. I don't know these judges. I don't know if they're hardcore TDSers. Even if they are, they're going to come and say, look, is this juice worth the squeeze? It's not. Let's get Trump on something else. I don't believe Mitt Romney is a neocon, but like that type of the never Trumpers in our own party, I think they got to have some credibility too. I mean, the Trump era is going to end 2028, maybe sooner than that. He'll be a lame duck. And so these guys got to have some kind of like, hey, we were on the same team, right? Because you're going to look for the future of the party.
That's a given. When it comes campaign season, they're going to pull a hair out their tush. They go, I was with Trump. Always do. So let me get your thoughts on something legal. Jonathan Turley, who seems to be conservative, but he's not. He actually leads more progressive, but over the last 10 years, he seems more conservative because the left has done so much political persecution. They've abused the laws. But he called this ruling a, quote, tremendous victory, unquote. He criticized the case as, quote, grotesque use, unquote, a trophy win. He warned that remaining sanctions could be overturned. He's kind of laid it out in terms of the price out. They purposely put it so high, in essence, with the penalty, because they knew the daily interest accruement would make it too difficult for Trump to appeal, and he would just, you know, settle it out. And that kind of backfired. and Trump did appeal it and did win. So in layman terms, what Leticia James was trying to do is make it hard enough to where Trump couldn't secure a bond, you know, because of the daily interest. So it wasn't necessary Trump could afford it, but he couldn't afford getting a bond to cover it. And the court effectively blocked his ability to file an appeal. That's why I tell you the judge was corrupt. Now, there's also Andrew McCarthy, who is the conservative, and he said that Trump may be completely exonerated with the appeals. And it's not just social media, but a lot of individuals are saying that Leticia James' law license, there's legit reason to revoke it. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been watching Bill Maher lately, and he's actually saying that he's disheartened by the Democrats' approach on things lately, right? Let's take, for example, if Trump is for it, many Democrats, not all, will be against it for the sake of being against Trump. And they will, basically they're against America, right? If they want to allow a bunch of illegals to come in and move in and millions and millions, they're willing to do that to just get at Trump. So it's heartening to me, not disheartening, but heartening that guys like Jonathan Turley say this is a victory for Trump and America. I mean, this is, if we want to clean up America, we need to have both Democrats and Republicans come back to the sense of, like, we put America first before party.
Exactly.
I believe at this point is the Democrats going, we're putting anti-Trumpism before anything, then party, and then America. And that's my belief. I know a lot of good Democrats, but a lot of them are like that, and that's that.
That's because they have the disease called TDS.
Oh! Right. Yeah, so I'm sitting at work and somebody's like, I'm like, how was your day? I don't know how I can last through this Trump era. And I'm like,
you mean the economy booming? Like, your wages? I mean, it's like, get over it. Okay.
I open up my jacket and there's my Trump MAGA. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll zip back up again. Like, how do I respond to that? Don't bring it to work. Now I know you as a TDSer. And I got to deal with that for the next however many years, right?
So to close this out, a New York appeals court unanimously tossed out a $500 million civil fraud penalty against a former president, now a sitting president. They cited there were no victims, there were no financial losses, and it was exaggerated asset claims in the terms of how little they valued the Trump assets. This ruling exposes how civil laws were weaponized for political punishment. You have prosecutors like A.G. James now face calls for accountability, including potential disbarment, likely won't happen, but we can always dream, and a federal investigation, which is happening on her own mortgage and valuations of her properties, as her tactics undermined public trust in the justice system. This case highlights a dangerous precedent, as G was noting, using the courts to persecute political opponents, then financially choking them off from appealing. If it can happen to a former president, my friends, it can and will happen to anyone. And who knows who that anyone could be? It could be you. This wasn't justice. It was political persecution. And those who cheer political prosecutions today, you will regret it tomorrow, when they are used by different but similarly corrupt individuals in power. Abuse of power cuts both ways. And that's why, as G said, we can't allow any side to weaponize the law. And those celebrating this outcome are the vilest of creatures, claiming the righteousness of democracy while gleefully breaking it to serve their own selfish, hateful agendas. They are the scum of the earth. My final takeaway: Trump didn't commit the fraud they allege, and supporting this kind of targeting just because it's aimed at someone you oppose is a mistake. The law must protect everyone. If it doesn't, it protects no one. All right, G, before we move on to our next topic, I have been given marching orders, and I don't mind showing this shirt. This shirt is for my brethren Latinos, para mi Latinos. ¿Quién es el más macho? Sabemos. Trump is the macho. G-Man, another macho man there. What do you think of my macho Trump shirt there?
I should wear that to work.
Yeah, you get fired.
Get some responses. I don't think I will do that. But
you guys can check that out at grumbliesmedia.com. Or I should say this. Our tech here put the QR code, and you can just use your iPhone or, I'm sorry, your phone to check that out. Okay, let's keep moving on before we run out of time here. The D.C. crime crackdown and legal reversal tensions. This story has become a national story. And when I researched it, it's like I couldn't stop finding how much was written on it. But in essence, the federal override in D.C. ignites a flashpoint. Trump invoked emergency powers to seize operational control of D.C. law enforcement. He cited uncontained urban violence and data suppression by local officials. The latter is turning out to be true. We'll talk about that. But he deployed the National Guard units and federal agents that flooded the high crime zones. MPD, which is the Metropolitan Police Department, command structure was sidelined. Uh-oh, looks like we lost the G-Man here. He'll get back on. So the D.C. Council denounced the move as authoritarian overreach. Civil rights groups, they warn of constitutional violations, TDS. And they also talk about militarized policing. So the optics, you have armed patrols near Capitol Hill, curfews enforced, immigrant-heavy neighborhoods report heightened fear and confusion. Let me rephrase that. Democrat groups report heightened fear and confusion. So what is the narrative framing here? Well, Trump calls it a rescue mission for a city abandoned by its own leadership. Democrats labeled it a federal hijacking of local governance. So all this began August 11th. President Trump invoked Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act to place the MPD under federal control for 30 days and activated the National Guard. Now, Trump described the Capitol as overtaken by violent gangs, bloodthirsty criminals, roving mobs of wild youth, drugged out maniacs, and homeless people, which is actually true, my friends. If you talk to the actual residents there, and most of them are black, they're like, yes, that is true. And it's all the people who don't live in those districts, who don't live in those zip codes, saying otherwise. Oh, looks like we got him back here. The G-Man returns.
I don't know what happened, but I'm back.
So Vice President J.D. Vance added the administration is cleaning up D.C. and making America safe again. All that was August 11th. Just within days, everything that I just said was happening. Now, on August 21st, which was just yesterday, Pam Bondi announced 630 arrests, including the infamous Subway Man. For those of you not aware, and it's always the white suburban guys. I usually say women, but this was a guy. He sat there. I mean, the guy's just flipped out. He just, the TDS, oh, yeah, he had a sub. You know, so he was, oh, and then threw the sub at the federal guy. And then that began his downfall. They chased him down, and he was fired the next day. But Pam Bondi announced 630 arrests, including 53 just a couple days ago and 24 by ICE. G, 86 illegal firearms seized. A missing child recovered with assistance from the U.S. Marshals. Homicide rates dropped to zero in the past week. Violent crime is down 22%. Car carjacking is down 83%. Robbery down 46%. Hegseth ordered about 2,000 National Guard troops deployed and to carry weapons. Now, President Trump stated he would join a secret night patrol. I think he may have, I don't know if he's done that yet, but he's going to have Trump on the rampage, secret night patrol, with police and National Guard to observe the crime sweep firsthand, declaring, quote, we're going to do a job. And the Department of Defense is sending 20 judge advocate general attorneys, JAG attorneys, to D.C. to prosecute crimes as special assistant U.S. attorneys, blending military and civil justice in this operation. G, your thoughts on some of the initial points that you're able to hear, but also on this child recovered, the dropping homicide rates to zero and crime stats in general. But do you think it's overkill with the National Guard, or do you think it's needed?
No, I have faith in the police, right? And I think they're doing the best they can, but I think they're being cobbled by the politicians who are saying, hands off. They're afraid of being caught in a, you know, a BLM protest, you know, a few weeks down the road or whatnot. So I think their hands are tied in many ways. And so the National Guard coming in and saying, we're just going to do whatever we want. They're not beholden to the mayor of D.C. I think this is great. I mean, you see what's happening there. I think a large part of that is the deterrence factor, right? So the crime is down because they're going to get caught, and they know it. Once the National Guard leaves, though, it might spin right back up again. Maybe it might take a couple weeks or whatnot. But yeah, good things are being done. I mean,
what about the overreach? That Democrats are screaming overreach. I mean, look at this image here. Robbery, 46. ADW, 6%. Carjacking, 83. Car theft, 21%. These are all numbers down. Violent crime, 22% down. Property crime, 6% down. All crime, 8% down. I mean, they made an immediate difference. So how do you respond to a Democrat who says, this is overreach, overreach?
Oh. Ulysses S. Grant, he sent down troops, right? Then I believe that was the Army, but he sent down troops to ensure that former black slaves can vote and to stop the lynchings. And then you fast forward 100 years to LBJ. Now we're talking about the Democrat president, and he sent down troops so that blacks can go to white school, or not white schools, but reintegrated schools, right? So there's a lot of precedent for sending the National Guard in to do this work.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, and it might have misspoke. I don't think LBJ sent down – he might have sent down National Guard, not troops, right? But
I think LBJ sent them down for the Selma March, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
The walk on the Selma March, I think. Yes, because Eisenhower sent them in to allow the black kids to go to school, LBJ to allow Martin Luther King to march on the Selma March. And they did it against Democrats who they were fighting. Gee, real quick here. Moving on here. Well, first of all, where were these critics during COVID? There were no overreach complaints then. They complied, got jabbed, and followed orders. Now they're all about soapbox oppression now. You know, back then, they submitted. Now it's like because it's Trump. But, gee, real quick, let's talk about the former D.C. police chief, Charles Ramsey. He said, as you said, this is temporary, but they need to come up with laws that work in full. The D.C. Police Union, though, that image that I'm showing you from, he also said that they're downplaying the stats. Your thoughts on the fact that they're downplaying the stats?
I don't think they're downplaying the stats. I think that this crime is down. I mean, if you see troops walking along the street, you're not going to carjack, right? Now I'm surprised.
No. What I mean is they're.
You mean the Democrats are downplaying the stats?
Correct. Here we go.
I'm
trying to figure this out. Sorry.
Yeah. No, of course they are. I mean, so the Democrats view this as, okay, they're Trump's Reichstag fire, right? They compare Trump to Hitler all the time, and this is just a way to gain more power, to stay in power for a third term. I see what they're saying. And I get the narrative that they're trying to, you know, basically shape in preparation for the midterms. This is all about the midterms. So they're downplaying it because they don't want to believe that this is working.
No, gee, what I'm referring to is they're downplaying the stats, meaning they're lying about them. A D.C. police sergeant exposed their superiors for misclassifying crimes to make stats look low. The union chief said that commanders go on scene if it's somebody who's been shot. They go, you know, they put it down to a lesser crime. Your thoughts? I mean,
you're talking before the troops came in.
Yes. They're saying, why are you sending troops? Crime is down, and they're saying it's down because you're lying about the stats. And so that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, okay. It's a simple answer. So per capita, I know Washington, D.C. is smaller than Mexico City, but per capita, there's more, I believe, murders. Not crime, but murders than Mexico City. And Mexico City has a travel advisory. Don't go there because it's too dangerous. Well, you can say the same thing about our capital. So for the Democrats to do this, it's absurd. It's a political game, and they're not acknowledging that there's a problem. And now Chicago's next on the list. Now they're going to say, Chicago's a safe brotherly city. Why are you sending troops or National Guard there? I know what they're going to say, but they're going to lose that argument too.
All right, so I want to show a little clip here from Fox 5 and Homa Bass. Boy, she's a pretty cute-looking woman there. Homa, be careful out there in D.C. Oh, I guess I better turn it on.
So starting today at 12 giant grocery stores in D.C. and Maryland, if you have a bag over 14 inches, you cannot take it inside the store. Also, if you're under 18 years old, you cannot go into the store after 6 p.m. without an adult. Giant store leaders say it is all because of thieves, and shoppers we spoke to say all these new rules, these are a small price to pay.
I'm for anything that works. If it makes anything better for the community, and if it works for the kids to keep the kids from coming in, I think because you should teach the kids not to steal.
It's unfortunate because apparently a lot of theft has been happening, and that's the reason why. So they got to do something. Otherwise, we won't have a giant. So to prevent it from closing, I don't blame them. They got to do what they got to
do. So starting today.
All right, I want to show another one here, G. This is a woman who's just traveling. How happy she is. Oop. Actually, I guess I better stop screen sharing. Apologies to the audience there. Let me, here we go.
Finally able to chill at a red light with my window down, not worried about if one of them young niggas is coming. Ride through the city, feeling more safe than I ever felt.
Gee, I ran into videos like that, hundreds of them. And we don't have the time. I had a couple more slotted to show, but hundreds of them. Like that, you know, in terms of the people are saying, hey, I feel safe now, you know, for the first time ever, I feel safe. Now, the reason I bring that up is because polling is showing we don't like this, we don't want this. But I wanted to point a counterpoint to this is that they're not polling the people who live in those actual districts. They're polling the politicians, the people nationwide, the people who don't live in those suburbs. Why aren't they talking to the people who live there? Why politics? That's why you can't trust polls. That's why you have to look at the polls and the raw data and exactly. So to me, the only polls that matter are polls where they're talking to the people in those districts. Your thoughts before we close this one out.
Well, a lot of that stems to the old age-old concept of the ivory tower liberal, right? It's like some white guy from very far away saying, you can't send troops into that neighborhood. It's, you know, I'm just going to use blocks, but you can say Hispanic or whatever race it is. But predominantly these neighborhoods are all one race in the 80-90%. And the crime is done against the people of that race. So you can say you're targeting the black community, but you can also say you're saving the black community because it's like that. A woman driving and she's looking around and you can just sense the relief. Like she's breathing, saying, I can drive without worrying about being carjacked. I mean, you know, the lady who looked like that, that lady in Star Wars, right? With the big round glasses.
Yes.
I mean, they're all saying like this, if it's going to not cause theft, this is good. You know, theft causes prices to go up because somebody's got to pay for the missing or the stolen product. And it's going to be right. The next person who comes in and buys stuff. So, the ivory tower liberal, you can and talk to the people who are actually suffering under your policies.
And that's a big thing. Look, I'm not for black America. I'm not for white America. I'm a Latino. I'm not for Latino America. I'm for America. So yeah. When I see my fellow citizens hurting, I'm like, we got to help one another to become Americans and unified in a better country. And I'm sick and tired to black America because they're taking the policies they've used to manipulate you to my culture, Latinos. And this nonsense has to stop, you know. So while Democrats rage against Trump's federal incursion into D.C., the real story isn't the optics. It's what's unraveling behind the scenes. DOJ investigations into possible, I believe, actually happening crime data manipulation. That's not just noise being made. It's a flashy red light you should be concerned about. If city officials cook the books to downplay violence, that's not just a local scandal. That's a breach of public trust with actual national security implications. Why national security? There are tons of dignitaries that frequent that area as well. And this isn't just about D.C. It's a warning shot, as G stated with Chicago. When federal oversight exposes local failure, it forces a reckoning that Donald Trump is now dealing with. So what happens when residents in Chicago, Boston, L.A., or San Francisco start demanding the same protections? We don't want this to happen, but if you don't take care of your own cities, this is what people feel they're resource to asking for, the feds to step in. So are we looking at the early stages of a playbook to clean up America's most violent cities? I don't know. And as always, the loudest critics aren't the ones living it, as we just talked about. They're the outsiders, the well-off, the suburban woman, the Democrats, the libertarians, the rhinos, the elites. Oh! They don't live in the zip codes where the carjackings happen. They don't walk past the memorial candles of those who've lost their lives. They get on their high horse, not because they care, but because they can. It's tribalism. They're the ones with optics. It's TDS, and we are just pawns in their game. But what if it were their kids, their wife, their loved one, mugged, beaten, raped, murdered? You'd hear a different tune. Suddenly, there would be outrage. Suddenly, it's injustice. It's funny how empathy only kicks in when the pain hits home. Let us know your thoughts. And with that, G, I think we're going to close the show out here. We like to keep it down and dirty here. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you not only tune in next week, but support us by sharing and liking this podcast. But before I forget, make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. You can check out our new swag and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify at Grumblings Media for more. Until next week, I am William Del Pilar for G Mangani and Fired Up. Stay safe, and we are out.